Thank you, Tom. So, great job, everybody. So wonderful to see you accepting your day count and excited about it. And this is where the life really begins, by coming to a meeting and being open to what the program can offer. Now, the meetings are not the steps. They're two different things. And what I'd like you to consider is that both work. They work beautifully and in tandem. So you don't do one or the other, you kind of do both. And what we're doing and have been doing for the last few weeks now is we're going through the steps. And my job is to share with you my experience. It's not the way to do things. This is what's I've uncovered in my spiritual journey over the 54 years I've been sober. So although I'm not intending to persuade anybody of anything or believe something that you don't believe in, all I'm charged to do today is to share my experience around these life-giving steps. And up till now, steps one, two, and three, we've been kind of organizing ourselves around the idea that I am powerless. And what that actually means is the fight is over. I no longer can fight alcohol on alcohol's terms. Why? I don't have the power. This is a very interesting word that Wilson uses. I am powerless. And my life is unmanageable, which is another way of saying I don't have a power to manage my life completely. And then we go and move from that idea and becoming to believe in something other than ourselves. Most of us come here very self-determined. We trust our thinking, we trust our egos, and we walk around as if what we're saying to ourselves is actually true and facts, and they're not. What we're asked to do now is to say, okay, I am going to believe in something, and that something has to be more powerful than I can imagine, so that I can recover, I can become whole again as I once did. And the Wilson uses the word restore to bring back what has already been there and continues to be there. This is a very important distinction. Now, next thing we want to talk about is that you make a decision to have turn your life and your will over to the care of God. Now, a couple of things we talked about. Decision means to cut off any other options. See, I'm powerless. I come to believe in a power greater than myself, and now I'm making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Now, just an experience that I want to share with you. Have you ever cared for somebody? Have you ever been cared for? And what does that feel like when you're being cared for from somebody? What does it feel like to you when you care for someone else? See, what we're doing is stepping into something that for most of us, we have no idea. Because we're no longer taking the wheel. We're letting it go. Why? I'm powerless. My life's unmanageable. And I'm making a decision to turn my will and my life over the care of God. And we talked briefly about care, about will. Will simply means is about to cause something in me. The original cause of God's power is available to me. Now, today we're going to talk about step four. And step four is a very interesting step. And I kind of named this talk Telling the Truth Without Losing Yourself. And if I have it given a second name, it would be The Sanctity of I Am. I Am. So I want you to be able to separate what we're about to separate here, because this is not an indictment. This is really about seeing something that you don't haven't seen before in yourself. But it isn't in your essence. And let me start. There was a lamp in my sponsor's office. Floor lamp. Tan shade. One of those old ones with a brass neck that you could bend forward to wherever you needed light. It stood in the corner behind his chair. And every time I sat across from him, which was not as often as it should have been, I was aware of it. Not because there was something remarkable about it, just because it was the only warm thing in the room. Everything else was institutional, the kind of chairs you find in offices that nobody decorated on purpose. Carpet, the color or of something that had been given up. But that lamp, I remember the first time he read me the line of the fourth step. He opened the big book, held it at arm's length, the way an older man do. And he read, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. I heard that sentence the way I imagine many of you have heard it. I heard, now we're going to prove what is wrong with you. And I remember looking at that lamp, not at him, at the lamp, because something in me needed to look at something warm right then. Because if step four meant what I thought it meant, if it was the step where we added up the evidence and announced the verdict, then I already knew how this was going to go. I want to talk to you tonight about the step and how it actually works and what it means to me, and about how I misread it for years and what it cost me to misread it. About the difference between examining your conduct and condemning your essence. About the difference between what happened and what you made it mean. About why the most frightening step in the program may also be the most freeing, if you let it. I want to begin with that word moral. For a long time, longer than I want to admit, that word felt like a sentence, like a trap, because I heard it as identity. I heard, here is where we assess your worth. Here is where we determine whether you are, at the core of yourself, acceptable. And if that is what you hear when you hear moral inventory, then of course you will do one of three things. You will avoid it, you will rush through it, or you will drown in it. None of those is fearless. And here is what I come to understand about that word. Moral refers to the quality of my conduct, my motives, my patterns, my reactions, my choices. It does not mean my sacred worth is up for debate. I believe in the separation of identity and behavior deeply. It is one of those things recovery has taught me that I cannot unlearn. I have been angry. That is the same as saying I am anger. I have acted out of fear. That is not the same as saying fear is my nature. I have been dishonest. I have been selfish. I have used people and called it something else. But those patterns are not the deepest truth about who I am. Step four examines what is false in me, what is fearful, what is distorted, what has caused harm. but it does not erase what is sacred in me. It cannot, because that is not what it's for. Then why is it so hard? I've watched people in the program approach step four the way they approach a room that they're afraid to enter. They slow down before it. They find reasons. They tell themselves they will do it properly when there is more time, when things settle, when they feel ready. And they have never felt ready. Because ready is not how you enter a room when you're afraid of. You enter afraid. But I think the deeper reason step four feels so hard is this. Most of us don't know how to observe ourselves honestly. We've never learned it. Nobody taught us. So when the time to look, we do one of two things. We blame ourselves and collapse. Or we defend ourselves and explain everything away. We either exaggerate our wrongs until they become our identity, or we minimize them until they disappear. We collapse into shame, or we escape into justification. Neither one is fearless. Fearless does not mean harsh. Fearless means honest. But there is a difference. And it matters more than almost anything I know. Harsh says you are the sum of your worst moments. Honest says here is what is operating in you. Here is what drove you. Here is the pattern. Now you see it. The point is not to feel worse about yourself. The point is to see more clearly. Now, I want to talk to you about the part that I think is the real engine of this step. Because I have come to believe that a great deal of our pain, maybe most of it, does not come only from what happened to us. It comes from the meaning we attach to what happened. The mind is always making meaning. That's what it does. Something happens, and almost instantly, before we have thought about it, before we have asked a question, the mind decides what it means. He didn't call me back. She corrected me in front of everybody. They didn't include me. And in the space in between the event and the meaning, in that tiny space that feels like no space at all, the story forms. He doesn't respect me. She's trying to humiliate me. I don't matter. And because the mind moves so quickly, because the meaning arrives wrapped in feeling, it presents itself as fact, not as an interpretation, as truth, as evidence that confirms everything I've already feared about myself or about the world. Step four taught me to make a distinction I had never made before. What happened? And what I made it mean? Those are not the same thing. What happened? He did not return my call. What I made it mean? I'm not worth his time. What happened is she corrected me. What I made it mean, she three sees right through me. Everybody sees through me. I am often not reacting to the event. I'm reacting to the meaning I attach to the event. That does not mean I was always wrong, by the way. Sometimes the meaning was accurate. Sometimes he really didn't care, and I knew it, and pretending otherwise would have been its own kind of dishonesty. But it means my interpretation is not automatically true just because I felt it strongly. Facts are usually simple. Meanings are usually loaded. So what does self-observation actually look like? When I cannot observe myself honestly, I ask the wrong question. I kept asking, what's wrong with me? And that question always led me to the same place, down, into shame, into the verdict, into the collapsed heap on the floor that cannot do anything from there except wait for the feeling to pass. Step four became workable for me, began to feel like something I could actually do when I stopped asking what's wrong with me and started asking what was operating in me. That one shift changed everything. Because what was operating in me is a question I can answer without the floor dropping out. What happened? What did I feel? What did I make it mean? What did I do? What was driving me? Fear, pride, the need to control, resentment, dishonesty, desperate wish to be seen as something I didn't believe I was. That is not self-indulgence. That is self-observation. Self-indulgence circles around the self, feeding it. Self-observation tells the truth about self, that it is possible to do something with that truth. And in the inventory itself, I try to hold three things at once. Do not exaggerate. Do not excuse and do not condemn. Just tell the truth. That is harder than what it sounds because most of us have a strong gravitational pull toward one direction or the other. We either inflate, we make ourselves the villain of every story, we collect evidence of our own badness, or we minimize. We explain, we contextualize, we find reasons until the reason becomes the whole thing and nothing remains to be responsible for. The inventory asks you to hold the middle, not exaggeration, not excuse, the plain fact. I want to say something now about why this matters spiritually. Because there is a reason step four calls it fearlessness. And I do not think it is the reason I assumed when I was new. I thought fearlessness was about courage, about grinding your teeth, about making yourself do the hard thing. I have come to think it is about something else entirely. I think fearlessness becomes possible when the identity is secure, when my worth depends on appearing good, when what I believe about myself is conditional, when it rests on my performance and my record, whether people in this room will think well of me, then of course I cannot be honest. Of course I will defend and minimize and explain, because honesty threatens the whole structure. But if I believe, truly believe in my bones, not just in the words, that my worth is determined by my patterns, is not determined by my patterns.
5 minutes, please, John. Thanks.
Okay. That there is something in me that addiction could not destroy, could only bury. That's what step four is going to uncover, is not my identity, but the debris that has been covering it. Then I can afford to look. And when my identity is secure, honestly becomes possible. And here is what I've learned about God and all of this. God does not need my performance. God asks for my truth. Step four is not where God shames me. Step four is where God meets me in truth. And I'm going to close by going back to that lamp. I thought about the lamp for many years, not because it was remarkable, because of what it did. A lamp does not change what is in the room. It does not rearrange the furniture. It does not remove the difficult things. It does not make room the prettier than it is. A lamp just tells you or lets you see what's already there. And what I have been afraid of for years without knowing, I was afraid of it, was the light. Not because of what the light would find, but because of what I thought I would have to do with what I found. I thought the light would require a verdict. I thought the light would require a sentence. I was wrong. The light just lets you see. Seeing honestly, without collapsing, without defending, without exaggerating or excusing, seeing is where freedom begins. You see, I am not my resentment. I am not my fear. I am not my old patterns. But I must be willing to see them as if I want freedom from them. I look at the people in the room sometimes. And people who are approaching step four or have been circling it for months, I want to say this to them. What I wish someone had said to me, sitting across from my sponsor in that office with the institutional chairs and that brass lamp, it is not a verdict. It is not a sentence. It is a lamp. It is the most loving thing the programs asked you to do, to stop living in the dark. To turn on the light, to find out that you are still standing. Step four is not humiliation, it is illumination. Thank you for your generous listening.